Okay, Parshas Matos Masei. So Rabbeinu Bechai begins Matos with the Pasuk in Mishlei Chaf Dalet, Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. It says, Yiras Hashem b'ni v'melech, im shonim al tisarav, which means fear Hashem, my son, and the king. It means like the physical king. And im shonim with people who change or flip-flop al tisarav, don't mix with them. So Rabbeinu Bechai tells us that means that a person should fear Hashem first and foremost. That comes first in the Pasuk. A person should fear Hashem first and foremost, because Hashem is Melech Machim Lachim, of course. But a person should also fear the king. And he says, just like you fear Hashem, even if you don't see him, so too you have to fear the king, even if nobody's watching. Now, in other words, fear the king as in follow the rules, follow the laws of the land. Now, I don't know if he means even if nobody's watching in a practical sense, because you might still get caught anyway, or if he means that it's the right thing to do. But the bottom line is, he says that a person should fear Hashem and also fear the king, that they don't do wrong even when nobody's looking. And he says, of course, they are not comparable, fear of Hashem and fear of the king, which is why there's a word in between them. It doesn't say, Yiras Hashem v'melech, fear Hashem and the king. It says, Yiras Hashem b'ni, my son. It stuck the word in my son there to separate them, because they're not, shouldn't be said in the same sentence. But at the same time, we have to fear Hashem and have to follow the government rules, fear the king. But im shonim al tisarav, with people who change it, he says, shonim meaning like changing, al tisarav, don't mix with them. What do they change? They get it out of order. The pasuk started with fear Hashem, then the king. Some people flip it. They fear the king and then Hashem, meaning if the king says to do an aver, they say, okay. So that's not okay. You have to fear Hashem first and foremost, and then the king. So even though he says, doing what the government says, of course, super important. As we know, you have to daven for the success of the government, because they protect everyone and they keep order. But of course, if they tell you to do an avera, then you cannot listen to them, because we already took a shua to follow what Hashem says. Then he brings his pasuk in Koheles, Perek Ches, pasuk Beis. It says, "Ani pi melech shemor, val divras shuas Elokim," which means, I follow what the king says. In other words, I follow whatever the king is in, the regular king says, the king of the government. But if the king tells me to do against Hashem, I follow what Hashem says, because I already swore in Har Sinai to keep the Torah and the mitzvos. And we have to keep our swear, which is kind of how he gets into swearing. And he says that swearing is part of Yiras Hashem, to not swear falsely. And even swearing on what is true is incorrect, meaning just a person shouldn't be swearing at all for no good reason. As he brings the Medrash, that brings the story from Yad HaMelech, who had 10,000 cities in Har HaMelech, and they all were destroyed because they used to swear truthfully, but for no reason. And even swearing truthfully is wrong if you're swearing for no reason. Anyway, so he says, since people like to swear, especially if they get angry, they swear at people. And not in the cursing kind of swear, like, you know, that I'll never go near you again. Some will say, I swear I never will go with you, get any benefit from you again, I'll never talk to you again. They usher things on themselves, and they say all kinds of stuff. So people get angry, so the Torah gave us a heter nedarim, a way to get out of, sometimes, to get out of a neder, with, if you use a mumcha or a pastin. Anyway, so that's why, and that's how he gets into Parshas Matos. He goes on for quite a while, bringing us the halachas of Nadarim, and I'm not going to go into that. That's just, you know, learn the sugya, you can look at the Shulchan Aruch. But he has a lot of the halachas of swearing. I'm just going to go into the points that are not the sort of thing you'd find in Shulchan Aruch. Which is, well, I guess this you would find in Shulchan Aruch, but like we said, swearing for no reason is no good. When is it okay to swear? It's okay to swear if it's to help you do the right thing. If you know, if you need to do something and you can't get yourself to do it, and if you'll swear, then it'll make yourself do it. It'll keep you away from sin. Or if you asser something on yourself, it'll keep you away from sin. That's when swearing is appropriate, which Chazal bring as well. It is then followed by the story that Hashem, the mitzvah, I should say, of that we were commanded to take vengeance on the Midianites because of what they did to us with the story from Bilam and Balak, where we sinned with the Benos Midian, Benos Moav, Benos Midian. But what does that have to do with Nadarim? Why are they next to each other? So Rabbeinu Bechai says the reason why this story of killing out Midian comes after Nedarim is because that was Hashem's way of saying to Moshe that even though I swore that you couldn't go into Israel, and I just read this whole thing about, told you this thing about this Heter Nedarim, I don't have Charat on my Shvuah, and you still can't go into Eretz Yisrael. That's why it says, destroy, take vengeance against the Midyanim, and then you'll die. Now Hashem calls it, says, go take vengeance against the daughters of the Midianites who you sinned with. So Hashem calls it Nikmas B'nei Yisrael. And Moshe, when he discussed it, he says it's Nikmas Hashem. So the Medrash brings, because Moshe said, this is really your Nikama Hashem, because the reason they went after us is because we're Jewish. And if we were Goyim, they wouldn't go after us. So therefore, it's really your Nikama Hashem. And anytime anyone starts up with the Yidden, we call it Alam Chayirim, right? It's a Pasuk in Tehillim. I'm just skipping now. Ayam Chayirim soon. Forget the rest of it. Anyway, whenever throughout the Torah and Chazal, whenever someone comes to the Klai, so we say it's a war against Hashem, because that's why we're attacking us, because we're Yidden, which means we're those who follow Hashem. So therefore, any attack on us is attack on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now it says Pinchas went to fight the Midianites. And Rashi tells us because he started with the mitzvah. But Moshe didn't go to fight the Midianites. So the Rabbeinu B'chai explains because Moshe was raised in... It's also from the Medrash Tanchuma. Since Moshe was raised in Midian, raised, meaning he lived many years there, it was not right for him to go to war against the Midianites. So therefore Pinchas went and not Moshe. Now I want to tell you something. That is a big chiddush, okay? Even though I think we're probably used to this kind of idea from the Torah. But imagine you lived in Germany pre-World War II. Then the Germans round up all the Jews, send them to concentration camps. Let's say you managed to escape, and you managed to join the American army. And you want to go to war against, join the American army against Germany. And someone would tell you, no, don't go to war against Germany. You know, after all, you grew up there. Be like, hello, they try to kill me. Forget it. I don't care that they, I grew up there. They're murderers. They try to kill me. I'm going to try to kill them. That's what happened here. I agree, World War II would have been a little different because going to joining on, you know, by ending the war, you were saving more Jews. Okay, we're not talking about that. I'm just talking about the Hakaras HaTov thing here. You would think that all Hakaras HaTov you have to someone is gone. Once they try to kill you, you can forget about all the nice things they did for you. Anyway, we see from the Torah not that way. That's what it seems. Moshe was not allowed to go fight against Midian, even though they tried to get all the Jews to sin and that they should all be wiped out. Still, you had to have Hakaras HaTov to them because you grew up there. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And something to keep in mind. Okay, later on we get into the Hagalas Kelim. They took all the booty for Midian, and they had to kasher it. So Rabbeinu B'chai goes into some of the halachas of kashering as well, which we won't talk about. But he does want to mention one thing. He speaks out that if you buy what the Kelim they got from Midian, which were not kosher, so they had to kasher them. So he says that if you have a kli that wasn't used, even if it wasn't used for many, many years, he speaks out, says that explicitly, even a kli that you haven't used for many years, you cannot use it without kashering it. Even, in other words, even though it hasn't been used for treif for many years, you still can't use it without kashering it. That's a din d'rabbanan. I'm just pointing out, there's a famous Chacham Tzvi who says that after 12 months, a pot that had any non-kosher in it, all the non-kosher went away after 12 months. Now the Chacham Tzvi himself says you still have to kasher it, which is really what it says in Rabbeinu B'chai and the Rambam, that you still have to kasher a pot that wasn't used, even if it wasn't used in years. But others say that that's, if you agree with the Chacham Tzvi's approach, you really shouldn't have to absolutely kasher it. It would be like nice, or you should, you don't absolutely have to. Anyway, I'm just pointing out it's clear in many places, but it's very explicit here that it does need to be kashered, even though it's been sitting around for years. And he quotes in a beautiful Ramban. So again, this is Sharon Rabbeinu B'chai, not so much Ramban, so I'm not going to go into it too much, but Rabbeinu B'chai quotes Ramban about why here we talk about Hagalas Kelim when they went to war with Midian, and when they went to war with Sichon and Og, we don't find any story about how they have to kasher, and that's because they didn't have to kasher from the wars of Sichon and Og. where they were going to keep the land as part of Eretz Yisrael, or as part of where the Jews would live. So then they were able to, they didn't have to kasher the food, the pots, but you can again look on the Ramban if you want to see all the details of that. Anyway, then we have the story of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, who said that we do not want to, we want to stay here outside of Eretz Yisrael in the places that were conquered. And it mentions there that they had gone to the war against, they had been part of the wars against Midian. And the Rebbeinu Bechai points out that it was a huge nes, this war with Midian, because they didn't go with that many people, and nobody was killed. And he says the Mechamis Midian, they were fighting, he says, a nation that was kechol asher sfas hayam, let's just say it was millions. Millions of people fighting thousands, is and no one should die, and that they win, and that they conquer everybody. It was an absolute miracle. But anyway, the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, they want to stay outside of Eretz Yisrael, so he brings the Medrash that says they were not right about this. They should have, they put their money before staying with the rest of the Jewish people, and because of that, they went into Galus first. That's what the pasuk says. They went first. They went into Galus first, and that's because they stayed where they stayed. But it was not. They shouldn't have done that. They should have been with the rest of Bnei Israel. The Rabbeinu Bechai points out that they were not afraid to be by themselves because they were strong physically, and they also were confident in their zchus, like we find in Devarim, when it talks about God, it says v'tzrof zroa avkat kod, that they were kiborim, strong, but also Chazal tells us tzrof zroa b'schus tefillin shebizroa, that they had that ability to win because they had the schus of the tefillin that you put on your arm, avkat kod, they had the schus of tefillin shebizroa. In other words, the reason why they were so confident is because, one, they were physically strong, more importantly, because they had schusim. Now, hearing Rabbeinu Bechai says something fascinating again, al pi Kabbalah. When the Bnei Gad of Bnei Reuven said they wanted to live on Eiver LeYarden, so they list a bunch of cities. It's in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Gimel. First, the Pasuk before says, Bnei Gad of Bnei Reuven came to Moshe, and they say, Ataros v'divon v'yazer v'nimra v'cheshban v'lalei u'savam u'nevo u'va'on. So you got nine cities. Taros, Divon, Yazir, Nimra, Cheshbon, Elalei, Sivam, Nevo, Von. Nine cities. Okay, so you and I read that and say, okay, nine cities, whatever. Why is the Torah listed? We don't know what Torah does. So Rabbeinu Bechai tells us why the Torah listed it. Now, before I tell you why, let me just tell you a hakdamah he gives, which is that many of these cities were named after Avodah Zarah's, so they switched those names. Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven switched the names. But Ataros and Divon were names of Avodah Zarah. So Chazal make the drasha here, or make a drasha that Lolam Yashlam Adam Parsh Yosef and Matzibur, Shnayim Mikravech Targum. A person should always learn Shnayim Mikravech Targum. And the Gemara says, Afilu Ataros V'Divon. Even Ataros and Divon are Pasuk. Why? Well, the simple reading is because it's just Targum. There's no translation to that Pasuk. It's in a full Pasuk of names. So you might think, what do you need to read Targum for? So it's telling you need to read Targum. So he says, Rabbeinu Bechai says, what the Chiddush of our Pasuk is that, because those are names of Avodah Zarah. So you might think you should dafka skip them. Kamash Malan, you shouldn't skip them. Okay, that's the Pashup shot. That's the Nigla. Then he says, I'll be so. Again, I don't know anything about so. Just like the, you know, say the words, which is, everything, like we find all over the Torah, things in that happen to have names, or things that exist in this world, are a mirror for what's going on in the upper worlds. So there were these nine names that were the names of those cities, but they were also remes to upper things like the ten spheros, one of which isn't mentioned. There's nine of them there. They're broken up. I forget how they're broken up. He says they're broken up into threes. But either way, it's a rem. Those nine are connected to the nine spheros, and he has a cheshbon of how each one equals different things, how each name is a hint to different, like Nevo is Bina, I guess the most obvious one, that's why I picked that one. But he has, you know, you could go look there, how each one is a rem is connected to these spheros. My point is a lot of, you know, when we read psukim, we sometimes the psukim that look to us the most, you know, why did that have to be recorded, are sometimes the most important. A similar thing, besides this, a similar thing, not from Rabbeinu Bechai, from others, is the eight kings of Esav. There also we're told that those eight kings of Esav, the pasuk goes on to list all the eight kings of Esav, and you're like, who cares? And then Chazal tell us about that, that all the sodos habriyah are hidden in those psukim. Okay, so you have to be a mekubal to know it. But just so we know, the things that seem the most unnecessary are the most sublime, the most important. I imagine that could be applied to Gemara as well. Sometimes you find Gemaras that don't seem to have, like, you know, like recording things that seem to be unimportant. It's also likely that there's a upper meaning to those as well. Anyway, so Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven say, Nachnu na'avor chalutzim. Now, Rabbeinu Bechai points out the obvious, that it's a little bit of a funny lashon. Nachnu na'avor chalutzim. Usually you say the word anachnu. What's this? Nachnu na'avor chalutzim. So he says, in Pashup Shat, that they just said they're super strong and they made themselves out sounding a little bit gaivadik. So they used the word nachnu instead of anachnu, because everyone knows the famous line, nachnu ma, right, which Moshe said, who are we to, you know. So nachnu is a lashon of humility, so that's why they switched to nachnu ma. But he says again, al pi other cheshbonos, this pasuk had to start with a nun and end with a nun, because there are three psukim in the Torah. Is it three? 11. There are 11 psukim in the Torah that start with a nun and end with a nun, and they hint to some shame. So it had to start with a nun, but okay. Let's go on to Parshas Maaseh. Parshas Maaseh, Rabbeinu Bechai has another introduction from Mishlei. It says, Reishis Chachma, Kenei Chachma. The beginning of Chachma is getting Chachma. And V'chol Kinyancha, Kenei Vinina. And with all your Kinyanim, acquire understanding. So he says, Shlomo Melech says that Kenei Chachma refers to Chachma Satara. That first, you need to acquire Chachma Satara. After that, you can acquire secular knowledge. Because if you get secular knowledge first, it'll mess you up. If you don't have any, it takes us to the extreme, which is what he sounds like he wants to do. If you know nothing about Torah, all you do is learn history and science and all this stuff, and then you hear about the stories in the Torah, so you'll think that they're not miraculous. You'll say, oh, the Jews were traveled in the desert for 40 years. I guess it was probably near, places that you were able to plant. You know, like their cities, out there, there have always been cities out there, in desert, generally desert areas, but in a certain place, there was some fertile ground. So the Jews must have been wandering near those type of places, and that's how they had food and water. If you don't read the Torah first, you'll be all messed up with that. You read the Torah, you find out all about the travels of the Jewish people, that they were in a place of where they were not near anything, and they were near where there were scorpions and snakes, and there was no civilization anywhere near there, as the pasuk in Yirmiyah says in Beis Vav, Eretz lo avar ba'ish v'lo yashav adam sham. Nobody have lived there. It's nowhere they couldn't possibly have lived if not for absolute miracles. That's why we have to learn the Torah first, and then it'll straighten our way of understanding. Then after we know Torah well, then we can learn other chachmas. Anyway, so this is why the Torah had to write out all the trips we did, all the masses, is because some people will see the list of all the places we travel and go, oh, I know that place. How are you going to live there? There's nothing there. You know, people would know that we were going through totally uninhabited places, and by listing it, people know that. They know what an ace it is. So that's how we get into Maaseh. But he immediately tells you a bunch of other reasons why the Torah had to list all the Maasos. One is, like Rashi says, to let everybody know, Chaz de Hashem, that we only traveled in 38 years. The Jews were only in 20 places, so they weren't constantly on the move. Also to let you know that they weren't just going aimlessly. There was an order to where they get based on where Hashem wanted us to go. He has another reason, which is a little bit, not Benigla, so we'll skip that for now. But his last reason is the reason why the Torah tells us all these Masos is because they're not the last time they're going to happen. You hear that? He says that when we left Mitzrayim, we went through all those trips, and when Mashiach comes, Lasad Lavo, to Geula, we'll also pass through those Masos. He sounds like he means literally those places, but that's what he says.
Begula Achrona Sidim Sheitzu Harbe Mizrael Midbar. He says, in the Gula Achrona, the final Geula, many Jews will go to the Midbar and they'll go past these places, and Hashem will protect them. And that's what the Navi says in Yechezkel, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Lamed Hey, Veotzeisem El Midbar Ha'amim. And the Ramban brings this as well, that we will go, Jewish people in the Gula Achrona will go El Midbar Ha'amim. Whatever that refers to, it's from Ben B'chai. It sounds like he thinks it's the exact Masos we did at the time of going out of Egypt. And that's why it relists it here, because it's for the future as well. I believe the Ramban just mentions Votesim al Midbar Amim. He also brings a Medrash that says, why were all these places Zocha to be written in the Torah? It's because they were Mekabel Klal Yisrael. They accepted us. We went through them, so therefore they got to be listed in the Torah, and therefore you can make a Kal V'chomer. If that's what happens to someone who accepts the Jewish people, so someone who brings in a Talmud Chacham into his house, certainly Alachas Kama V'kama. It used to be Kama, you know, back in Europe, that people would take in yeshiva guys who didn't have food back in Europe, and they'd give them food. And even happens sometimes here in America, at least it used to, where the people of the Bachram were fed by the local families. But in whatever way there is today, to bring in a Talmud Chacham to someone's house, so that's a huge schus for them. He also mentions, by the way, that when Mashiach comes, the Midbars will turn into Yishuvs, and the Yishuvs will turn into Midbars. And he says, Midbars, which were all places that you could not travel because they're all full of sand, eventually they'll be turned into roads. As it says, Asim Bamidbar Derech. So, Los Lavo, you'll have that. We'd like to think we're already getting that way, because there's certainly plenty of roads in the desert today. Anyway, who knows? Hopefully we'll see Mashiach, we'll figure it out. Okay, then we have, the Torah lists us, the Nasiim. So, by some of them it says the word Nasi, and by some it does not. We're talking about here, this is Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk Yutes, it lists the Nasiim that are there to divide up Eretz Yisrael. And so you have, it says, Eilah Shemos HaNashin L'mate Yehuda Kalev Ben Yifuna, you got Kalev Ben Yifuna, Mate Ben Shimon Shmuel Ben Amihud, Mate Ben Yamin Lidad Ben Kislon. Yet, nobody's called a Nasi yet, it just says the names. These are the people. Yehuda Ben Kalev, Kalev Ben Yifuna for Yehuda, Shmuel Ben Amihud for Shimon, Lidad Ben Kislon for Binyamin, and then we get to Dan, Lamate Dan, Nasi, Buki Ben Yogli, Livnei Yosef, Matev Nasheh, Nasi, Chani Alvin. All of a sudden, everybody's a Nasi. What happened in the first couple of psukim, the first three names, they weren't called Nasi. So, Rabbeinu B'chai actually says, it has to be given an explanation for each one. So for Kalev, the answer is, because everybody knew Kalev was a Nasi, you didn't have to say. Okay. Sounds hard to understand, but that's what he says. And he says by Bnei Shimon, that's because they weren't Zochah to be called a Nasi, because of what they had just done with their leader that had been killed. So they weren't Zochah to be called a Nasi. And Binyamin, he says, calls because of their future chait of Pilagish Begiva. That's what he says. Okay. Anyway, it's certainly an interesting question and an intriguing answer. Then we come to Ari Miklat. And just pointing out an interesting thing, he says, Agav, we know the story about Ari Miklat, if someone kills by accident, they go to an Ari Miklat. But he quotes the pasuk that we say in Tachanun, that's why I'm mentioning it, because we say this in Davening every day. What does that mean? So he brings a medrash that makes the following drasha, that Hashem, you should have mercy like you had, meaning when someone kills someone by accident, they don't get killed, which you might think is the right thing, you might have thought, because the mice, they killed someone. No, they don't get killed, they just have to go to Golis. And remember your mercy, because that's what happened with Adam Harishon. Adam Harishon, because of his sin, he brought Misa to everyone, to the whole world. And Hashem didn't kill him, he just made him go into Golis, leave Gan Eden. So therefore we say, Zechor Rachamecha, Hashem V'chasadecha, Hashem, remember your Rachamim and your Chesed that you created, are your Miklats and your Merachim on people who do things by accident. Ki Mi'elam Hema, because that's the way you always were, like from the time of Adam Rishon. Okay. Now we know you go free from the Ari Miklat, the person who killed by accident goes free from the Ari Miklat when the Kohen Gadol dies. So we all know Rashi gives two reasons, because the Kohen Gadol should have davened, right? And the other reason, But he also brings the Mor Nevuchim, which is less famous. The Mor Nevuchim says, because it's a nechama for the person when the Kohen Gadol dies. Why? Because, and other Rishonim bring this Mor Nevuchim too. I believe the Ramban brings it too. But anyway, it's brought by others. You feel, a person feels better when they're not suffering alone. In other words, if it's just them, then they're really angry. But, meaning the person who got killed, their family, they're really upset. When they hear the great Gadol Hador, some super special person in the nation, he died too. So the Rambam says that's a kind of nechama for them, and that helps the guy go free. Then we have the idea of Chanifus. The Pasuk later on says, Losa Chanifus Arts. And just interesting, Rabbeinu Bechai, he's quoting the Ibn Ezra, or the same as Ibn Ezra, both say, what does that mean, Chanifa? Translated as someone who does ra b'seser, someone who does evil when nobody's looking. That's called chanifus. Just interesting. Then we have the issur that you can't switch if your shevet got a certain nachla. So let's say a woman inherits it, she's going to go marry someone from another shevet. Then that piece of land will switch shvatim. So they weren't allowed to do that. You can't switch nachla from one shevet to the other. That was given to that generation, this mitzvah. Why not? So he says also because the Yud Beis Shvatim were connected, some Yud Beis Shvatim, whatever that means, in Shemayim. And then if you would mix the lands, it would be mixing up the kochos, and therefore that couldn't be done. Okay, I just want to end off the last pasuk. It says, or is it the second last pasuk? That's the last pasuk. This Eila Mitzvah Mishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Biyad Moshe. So Ben Machai points out this is a little bit different than the end of Vayikra. Here we end off the mitzvahs and mishpatim that were Biyad Moshe, and in the end of Vayikra, last pasuk in Vayikra does not say Biyad Moshe. Doesn't say mishpatim either, but it he mentions that, but it doesn't say Biyad Moshe. Rather, it says Eila Mitzvah Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. So why at the end of Vayikra does it say Es Moshe, and the end of Bamidbar it says Biyad Moshe? He answers because there were two different brisim in play. In Vayikra, you're talking about the bris, the original bris, and that with the Bnei Yisrael, and that after Chet Egel was over. So therefore, in other words, Moshe threw down the Luchos when he saw the Chet Egel, so that wasn't Neskaima Biyado, so it doesn't say Biyad Moshe. But the second bris, the re-bris we had afterwards, that's what we're referring to in Bamidbar. That's why it says there, Biyad Moshe, because that was Niskayim Biyado.